Today is Tuesday, August 17th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Taliban declares amnesty in Afghanistan.
We do not believe in monopoly of power, and also we believe that monopoly of power has not worked in the past.
Plus, UN seeks human rights guarantees in Afghanistan.
Must speak with one voice to uphold human rights in Afghanistan. I call upon the Taliban and all parties to respect and protect international humanitarian law and the rights and freedoms of all persons.
Also, thousands join pro-democracy march in Thailand. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The Taliban have declared an amnesty across Afghanistan and urged women to join their government. The militants are seeking to reassure a wary population that their rule will be different this time. Tuesday's comments come a day after deadly chaos gripped the main airports as desperate crowds tried to flee the country. Following a blitz across Afghanistan that saw many cities fall to the insurgents without a fight, the Taliban have sought to portray themselves as more moderate than when they imposed their harsh rule in the late 1990s. But many Afghans remain skeptical. While there were no major reports of abuses or fighting in the capital of Kabul as the Taliban now patrol its streets, many residents have stayed home and remain fearful. Taliban spokesman Sahil Shaheen.
We do not believe in monopoly of power, and also we believe that monopoly of power has not worked in the past. So that is why we want to have some figures, politician, Afghan politician in the future government. I think it is necessary and proper to have in order to have a durable peace in the country and open a new chapter of peace, coexistence and tolerance and reconstruction of Afghanistan. About women, we have announced already that they can have access to work and education by observing hijab. Today you may have seen on TV station women anchors wearing hijab and doing their job.
That's Taliban spokesman Suhail Shaheen. The Taliban's offer of amnesty is being viewed with skepticism abroad, but relief from an Afghan population weary from 2 decades of war. The offer covers government soldiers and warlords who helped drive the group out of power 20 years ago and includes assurances of maintaining the gains the country achieved in human rights and women education. I asked VOA's Ayaz Gul in Islamabad if the Taliban is reformed or bowing to international pressure.
International pressure is obviously there, and they know that the country has been through war for decades and it requires international assistance for the reconstruction effort. And that is why Taliban are making maximum attempts to have some kind of a governance system in Kabul that can win international legitimacy, because the United States and the rest of the global community have made it very clear to the Taliban that any government that is imposed in Kabul by force will not be given recognition, and instead it will be considered a pariah country.
What has been the reaction to this offer of amnesty? Some view it with skepticism.
This is a significant step on part of the Taliban, and skepticism is obviously there because they have, as of today, they have pardoned their real enemies that were considered real enemies of the Taliban, warlords. They have announced amnesty for government officials, security forces. How this thing will work out in the days to come, we don't know. And that is why there is skepticism and there are worries whether the Taliban will stick to their commitments. But this amnesty is a big step. There are two notorious warlords, Abdul Rashid Dostum and Atta Muhammad, who were very influential in northern Afghanistan. They fled Afghanistan during the recent fighting into Uzbekistan. But now we are hearing reports that Taliban are encouraging them to come back to their country and that the amnesty is applicable to those warlords. And then there are notorious former Afghan government commanders and police commanders who have been told to live a comfortable life, that Taliban will not touch them. In fact, Taliban officials have gone into the homes of some of these people who were worried about their safety and personally told them, conveyed to them that, you know, you can live comfortably and Taliban will provide security for them. So these are steps that we are seeing, but how will they translate really into a stable policy? It is seen and it is premature, I think, to guess anything at this stage.
How possible is that main actors in the former government, especially President Ghani, will take advantage of this amnesty and maybe return home?
That is a tough question, because the allegations that have been circulating in Afghan media and international media is that President Ghani and his associate fled the country with hundreds of millions of dollars in their bag. I mean, this is an allegation that we have come across in Afghan media today, yesterday, and even international media, and even Russian embassy spokesman in Kabul also quoting their own witnesses and evidence, claimed that huge bags full of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, were also taken away by President Ghani and his associates. So that is something that may prevent the Taliban from really extending this amnesty to those officials unless and until they are able to address these allegations, deny them, or some kind of assurances that they would need to give to Taliban that they were really not indulging in any corrupt practices. So that's a different situation, because as of now, the real worry and issue and challenge for the Taliban is to convince not only the Afghan population, but also the international community, that they are not here to undo the gains that Afghanistan has achieved over the past 20 years under the United States and its allies' presence in the country, like in terms of education, human rights, that they will undo all that. This is the challenge that the Taliban is facing. And my discussion with Taliban spokesman Sohail Shaheen, he categorically said that the Taliban is determined to have some kind of, an inclusive Afghan Islamic government in place where all members of the Afghan society are represented and a durable peace and stability is brought to the country so that the reconstruction effort could be taken forward with the help of the international community.
That's VOA's Ayaz Ghul speaking with me in Islamabad. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on the Security Council on Monday to, quote, use all tools at its disposal to suppress the global terrorist threat in Afghanistan, unquote, and guarantee that basic human rights will be respected. Quote, we're receiving chilling reports of severe restrictions on human rights throughout the country. I'm particularly concerned by accounts of mounting human rights violations against the women and girls of Afghanistan, unquote, he told the 15-member council. Taliban officials have issued statements aimed at calming the panic. Under Taliban rule between 1996 and 2001, women could not work in most jobs, girls were not allowed to attend schools, and women had to cover their faces and be accompanied by a male relative if they wanted to venture out of their homes. The United Nations has about 3,000 national staff and about 300 international staff on ground in Afghanistan. On Friday, the United Nations said some staff had relocated to Kabul, but that none had been evacuated.
Must speak with one voice to uphold human rights in Afghanistan. I call upon the Taliban and all parties to respect and protect international humanitarian law and the rights and freedoms of all persons. We are receiving chilling reports of severe restrictions on human rights throughout the country, and I am particularly concerned by accounts of mounting human rights violations against the women and girls of Afghanistan who fear a return to the darkest days. The international community must unite to make sure that Afghanistan is never again used as a platform or safe haven for terrorist organizations. I appeal to the Security Council and the international community as a whole to stand together, to work together and act together, and use all tools at its disposal to suppress the global terrorist threat in Afghanistan and to guarantee that basic human rights will be respected. The following days will be pivotal. The world is watching. We cannot and must not abandon the people of Afghanistan.
That's United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. ICRC Director General Robert Mardini voiced relief that, quote, devastating urban warfare, unquote, was avoided in Kabul when the Taliban fighters advanced into the city, but warned that humanitarian needs are likely to increase. More than 40,000 people wounded during fighting in Afghanistan have been treated since June at health facilities the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, supports, including 7,600 so far this month, the aid agency said on Tuesday. During the first 10 days of August, ICRC treated 4,042 wounded, meaning that more than 3,500 were treated in the past week alone, as the Taliban captured large swaths of territory, including Kabul, which fell without a fight. Mardini added in a statement that ICRC medical teams and physical rehabilitation center experts expect to receive patients for months and years to come as they recover from wounds from explosive devices that littered the country. Many of them laid in recent weeks.
The fact that fighting has stopped is positive news for civilians. It's a good respite, but the humanitarian needs are likely to be there and to increase. So the ICRC is present in Afghanistan and is committed and determined to stand by the Afghan communities and help them in the various fields. Well, the consequences of fighting on civilian population, the wounded people, those amputees who need to be fitted, these takes years, if not decades, of support. Our physical rehabilitation programs in Afghanistan is a testimony to this, where we're still supporting many of the wounded of past conflicts. So this is a huge challenge going forward, and we are committed to helping those people who have been injured in the recent fighting. In Afghanistan, we have a regular dialogue with the Taliban at leadership level, but also at local level, and this enables us to carry out our humanitarian work. This enables us to support the hospital. This enables us to evacuate wounded people day in and day out.
That's ICRC Director General Robert Madini. U.S. President Joe Biden said Monday it was no longer the United States' responsibility to fight in Afghanistan's civil war, despite disturbing scenes and Taliban taking control of the capital city of Kabul. Biden warned of swift retaliation if the Taliban attacked remaining U.S. personnel and allies as the nearly 20-year conflict comes to a close. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Washington.
The United States' longest war ending in fear and chaos as the Taliban overtook Afghanistan's capital city, prompting an evacuation of personnel from the U.S. embassy and dangerous last measures by Afghans desperate to leave the country. Despite those scenes, the President of the United States said he stood behind his decision to withdraw U.S. troops.
The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. If anything, the developments of the past week reinforced that ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan now was the right decision. American troops cannot and should not be fighting in a war and dying in a war that Afghan forces are not willing to fight for themselves.
Republicans and some Democratic lawmakers swiftly condemned Biden for failing to anticipate the speed of the Afghan government's collapse and the potential damage to U.S. credibility worldwide.
This will be a permanent scar on the Biden administration's presidency. That doesn't mean it'll be a failed presidency. It doesn't mean that in the end most people won't come to accept the fact that withdrawal, it's my view, withdrawal was not only inevitable, it was the right decision.
As the Taliban takes over governance of Afghanistan, analysts say the U.S. still has economic leverage in a country that is dependent on international assistance as well as traditional counterterrorism operations.
Our options now include making sure the Taliban understand that if they get in cahoots with Al-Qaeda or ISIS, or if they even indulge the worst of their own misogynistic and sectarian behavior and retaliate severely with violence against other Afghans, that we have options. We have military options to make them pay a price.
But the State Department confirmed Monday the U.S. no longer had a presence at the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, and the Pentagon said 2,500 U.S. troops were supporting efforts at the airport to evacuate personnel, including thousands of Afghan allies who helped the United States but are still awaiting U.S. visas to escape Afghanistan and almost certain torture and death at the hands of the Taliban.
The U.S. military remains focused on the present mission to facilitate the safe evacuation of U.S. citizens, SIVs, and Afghans at risk, to get these personnel out of Afghanistan as quickly and as safely as possible.
An uncertain end to a war that cost the U.S. trillions of dollars and often lacked a clear definition for victory.
I will not repeat the mistakes we've made in the past. Mistake of staying and fighting indefinitely in a conflict that is not in the national interest of the United States. Of doubling down on a civil war in a foreign country. of attempting to remake a country through the endless military deployments of U.S. forces.
Since 2001, four U.S. presidents, two Democrats and two Republicans, have struggled to end the influence of the Taliban in Afghanistan. Biden said he would not hand over the United States' longest ever conflict to a fifth commander-in-chief. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
With the Taliban seizing control of Afghanistan, Turkey seeks to avert the refugee exodus. The United Nations says the country already hosts over 4 million refugees, with about 120,000 of them from Afghanistan. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is pledging to step up diplomatic and security efforts to prevent an Afghan refugee exodus into Turkey. Erdogan, speaking Sunday, warned that the Taliban's victories in Afghanistan inevitably opens the door to more refugees heading to his country.
Türkiye olarak İran üzerinden...
Erdogan said Turkey is facing a growing migration wave of Afghans transiting through Iran. He said, "We will continue to make efforts to bring stability to the region, starting with Afghanistan." Erdogan spoke with Pakistani President Arif Alvi at his side, who was visiting Istanbul. The Turkish president said Pakistan, a close Turkish ally, was key to restoring stability in Afghanistan. Earlier this month, Erdogan said he's ready for talks with the Taliban leadership. The Taliban said last week they consider Turkey an ally of Afghanistan. Ankara has also held diplomatic talks with Tehran over the refugee crisis. Turkish officials have accused Iran of sending some Afghan refugees to the Turkish border, which Tehran has denied. Ali Hekmat, head of the Turkish-based Afghan Refugee Solidarity Association, says many Afghan refugees in Iran are desperate to leave.
I'm expecting that more refugees will be moving to Turkey by Iran. Thousands of Afghan army and authorities who escaped to Iran yesterday, the Iran government sent them back to Afghanistan. So most of the refugees are afraid that Iran pushing back them to Afghanistan. So it's the best choice to arrive in Turkey and maybe they are near to Europe.
Erdogan has declared a frontier wall with Iran will soon be completed to prevent new arrivals. With Turkey already hosting over 4 million refugees, mainly from the Syrian civil war, analysts warn of rising social tensions in the country. Last week, hundreds of people attacked Syrian refugees' homes and shops in a suburb in the capital, Ankara. Recent opinion polls indicate a majority of people want many of the refugees to leave, a stance backed by the main opposition party. Analyst Asla Aydin Tashbash says the prospect of a new wave of Afghan refugees poses a major problem for Erdogan.
It's a huge challenge and increasingly a very divisive issue in Turkish public opinion. There is an overwhelming anxiety in Turkish society about refugees in general, including some 4 million Syrians. The issue is so explosive in Turkey right now that that would be a huge political blow to him if he were to come out and say and announce that Turkey was formally accepting Afghan refugees.
Ankara is expected to continue to step up its efforts to control its borders. But with another significant refugee exodus being widely predicted, time is not on the government's side. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
This is the Voice of America. An Afghan military plane crashed in Uzbekistan over the weekend, and Uzbek authorities issued conflicting reports on the cause. That came as dozens of Afghan military aircraft carrying hundreds of servicemen reportedly reached Uzbekistan, among the thousands fleeing after the Taliban recaptured Kabul. The plane crash in southern Uzbekistan was reported by local media and confirmed by Uzbekistan's defense ministry. Later Monday, Russia's state news agency RIA Novosti reported it was told that Uzbekistan air defense systems had downed the plane. Tropical storm Grace is drenching Haiti just 2 days after a powerful earthquake struck the impoverished Caribbean nation. The tropical depression began to hit the country Monday and regained storm status overnight, adding to the misery of the thousands of people who lost loved ones, were injured, or became homeless. Grace also forced overwhelmed hospitals and rescuers to act quickly. The country's southwestern area was hit the hardest by Saturday's earthquake. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. A recent report found that community leaders in Burkina Faso are exploiting internally displaced women, demanding sex or money in return for food aid. One local official said these reported incidents could be, quote, the tip of the iceberg, unquote, in a displacement crisis of 1.3 million people. Reporter Henry Wilkins spoke to a victim in this report from the town of Kaya.
Burkina Faso's humanitarian crisis. Food is in scarce supply. Internally displaced people, or IDPs, at this unofficial camp in the centre-north region, so they do not receive food aid from the state or non-profits. A report last month by the News Humanitarian, a media outlet focusing on humanitarian issues, found that 8 IDPs had been forced into sex in exchange for food aid in the centre-north region. Sam Mednick is a reporter with the News Humanitarian.
Reporting I did with the women that I spoke to and aid officials and government officials, it seemed like everyone knew that this was happening. Few people were really willing to talk about it. The women that I spoke to said that they knew other women who had also registered for food, were having a hard time finding food assistance, and thought that they were being propositioned in the same way that they had been, either for sex or for money in order to add their names to the registration list.
The report also said an inter-nonprofit system to prevent and address sexual exploitation and abuse is not fully set up. A local official from a town with a large IDP population, who spoke on condition of anonymity, told VOA the size of the sex for food scandal is likely much bigger than has been reported so far. He says that there are so many women who approach them to express their concerns, but he does not have the exact number. He estimates between 20 to 30 displaced women have reached out so far. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, which provides much of the aid, refused to give an on-camera interview, but did respond to questions via email. Asked why the system for preventing cases of sex for food aid has not been properly set up, they said, "The government of Burkina Faso, supported by the UN, has a toll-free number for filing complaints in all cases of sexual or gender-based abuse. Focal points are in place to detect any sign of sexual abuse or exploitation, and humanitarian and other workers are trained on their responsibilities and accountability." Burkina Faso's Ministry for Humanitarian Affairs did not respond to VOA's request for comment. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kaya, Burkina Faso.
Thailand's young protesters have been joined by, quote, red shirt, unquote, veterans of the kingdom's pro-democracy battle. That brought tens of thousands out over the weekend, calling on Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha to resign. But as violent clashes with police became a nightly ritual, experts said Prayut is unlikely to bend to the protesters' demands anytime soon. Vijitra Drangudi reports from Bangkok.
Both young and old protesters mass on Thailand streets. These so-called car mobs are the safest way during a time of virus to voice demands for Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha to resign. As army chief, Prayut led a 2014 coup against civilian leader Yingluck Shinawat. 7 years later, he's still in power, and his authoritarian government has turned young people like this 25-year-old into unlikely protesters.
Before Prayut's coup, I was just a normal school kid, and I never thought I'd be involved in politics. But as time goes by, you realize the politics here affects all of us here, no matter your age.
Prayut's failure to vaccinate the public during Thailand's deadliest wave of the pandemic is uniting political forces against him. The older, mainly rural-based red shirts are protest veterans from the 2008 pro-democracy movement, loyal to the Shinawat political dynasty, which was founded by Yingluck's older brother, Thaksin. Despite efforts to send the protesters home, many stayed deep into the night. A frustrated youth at boiling point, and a government refusing to bend. Vijitra Dungdi, the VOA News, Bangkok.
U.S. experts are expected to recommend COVID-19 vaccine boosters for all Americans, regardless of age, 8 months after they receive their second dose of the shot. The goal is to ensure lasting protection against the coronavirus as the Delta variant spreads across the country. That's according to two people familiar with the matter who spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity. An announcement is expected as early as this week, with doses beginning to be administered widely once the Food and Drug Administration formally approves the vaccines. U.S. health officials recommended booster shots last week for some with weakened immune system. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu from Washington.